All right, we're back. I'm really excited. I wasn't ready for this today, and I'm super happy that it's happening. It is a very snowy day here in New Jersey. We have about, I'd say, 7 to 8 inches outside. I spent 2 hours shoveling very wet, heavy, dense snow. And if you're a Northeast person, you know that sucks. So my back is on fire. And that's all right, because I'm really excited to have Chase Bryant hanging out with us today. Yeah, Chase, dude. Thanks for coming to hang, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm sorry for these goofy ass glasses. I have the worst light intolerance. So like certain days I have headaches, and today your back's on fire. I've got a headache. It's going to make for a great podcast.
That's it, right? Both ends. Hey, the glasses look sick. I can never pull them off. You can. So I guess that's a move.
My wife told me the other day when I bought these that I would never buy these as just myself, but as an artist, I would totally buy these.
do you think that there's something to be said about that? Because I always said for so long that like people who are artists and who are creative, they have like they have really fun outfits and they wear items of clothing that like I could never pull off on my daily life. Do you separate those two things?
Man, so I've had a bad problem with that. For a couple of years, you know, I lived on the Gulf of Mexico and I was just, you know, cowboyed out and, you know, or I was fishing and I was in fishing clothes all day and wouldn't even wear shoes, you know, hardly. And so, I mean, having that, you know, that artist mode kick on and like kind of take full effect, it's like, then all of a sudden I can start wearing things that I wouldn't normally wear. But I feel like I'm trying to stop doing that. Like I'm trying to like kind of minimalize my closet so that I start dressing like the artist more often, because to be honest, like sometimes I feel like we're all only artists because we're trying to escape who we are as a person, right? Like sometimes, you know, and so I'm trying to get those two to separate themselves and just become that individual all in one, you know, in a sense. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think a lot of us do that. I just don't think a lot of us realize it, you know, that we don't like that we compartmentalize certain parts of our, you know, existence.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. Cause like I've thought about that before, but it's hard to separate those two things, right? Because like you find yourself in, like for so many years of success and putting music out and being around all these people that are also very musically talented and super cool. Like, I feel like some of that probably bleeds off onto you as a person. And that's why you're able to kind of maybe blend them. Maybe, I don't know, but yeah. It's very interesting. I find the whole thing very interesting.
I mean, I never saw Paisley in a pair of cowboy boots off stage. I never saw McGraw on anything else but his shirt off. And like, she's looking better than every other dude on earth.
What the hell's up with that?
You know, it's like, I mean, like, I don't know. There's a few, though, that are real. I mean, McGraw is McGraw, actually, really. Like, when you look at him, he's always, like, he always looks great. Like, he's always, like, he doesn't have to make up for anything. Like, that dude's, he's, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, nor does his family. Like, have you seen all of his, like, all of his kids? Everyone is, like, just looks so well-dressed, so well-made up. But, like, you know, like when I was out with Brantley, like what you see is what you get. I mean, like he was just, that's the way he was. Toby was the same way. Yeah. I remember being there with him. And, but I'm not trying to expose anybody to anything, but I feel like we're all a little different. And I feel like, you know, I grew up in a town where it was like, you were only allowed to wear cowboy boots. You had to tuck your shirt in for school. Your hair couldn't be over your ears. You couldn't wear logos. There were certain things you could and couldn't do.
Yeah.
And so I think I've always been a little scared to step out, you know, and do things I love. But I also love like icons like in the fashion world. And it's something I've always wanted to chase down a little bit. I just never, you know, I'm starting to a little more as the days go by, you know.
Well, I think that's super cool. And also just like letting yourself out of your comfort zone in a really weird way. Like I also kind of did the same thing. Like I said, I'm from New Jersey, right? And, you know, like I go to a day job every day and I wear jeans and sometimes a button down and a pair of shoes or sneakers or whatever it might be. But in my casual life, I wear, and this is, and I'm weird. I'm not saying this is normal, but I wear jeans and cowboy boots pretty much every single day. And it's just because that's what I like. And that's weird being from here, trust me, but it's just what I like and it's what I'm comfortable in. And it took me years to figure out like that I don't really care, you know, like what someone's saying and to like chase whatever you enjoy, right? Like I like looking at guys like, I don't know, like anyone, like Riley Green, he's got a nice pair of boots on. Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. Like cool that's boots. Cool. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like, I think it's cool that you have like this other side to you that's not just so one dimensional.
Yeah, the only thing that I will say about like that kind of stuff is it's like, you know, there's a difference in, okay, like for instance, like I'm a real big fan of this guy named JB Mooney. He's the writer that's like a total badass, you know.
I'm a huge fan too.
And man, like I've got some friends that wear cowboy boots, for instance, you know, and it's like, and but they're not like trying to put on a facade that's not, but then like you see the guys who like dress up and go to like the NFR rodeo like they've rode a bull in their life, and I've done it a handful. I've ridden, you know, on cattle plenty of times in my life, and they didn't always go well, but I guess what I'm trying to say is it's like I'm not wearing a Harley t-shirt because I ride a Harley. I'm wearing a Harley t-shirt because I respected like James Dean or Steve McQueen, like wearing some moto, kind of more like motocross sort of, you know, down dress kind of badass. And so I guess like in our genre of music, there's so many, I mean, Luke Bryan said that time on the Nelt Boys podcast about how he was like, you can call out the ones who are and who aren't in about
two seconds. I remember that.
And I think that's just how many of them are like trying to, you know, be Morgan Wallen now and dress like Morgan, and you know, and it's like it's sick, you know. I mean, as artists, I'm not saying as like a fan of it, but I'm saying like as artists, because it's like you're not really allowing anyone just to run by themselves in the relay in their own lane. It's like when you're running a 400 meter, you know, it's not like you're not trying to run over anybody. It's not NASCAR, you know?
Right. Right.
So it's like, just let the guy race in his own lane, you know?
Exactly. You don't have to step on anyone's toes. Let them do what they want to do. Right.
Exactly. I think that's cool. 5-minute rant.
But I think you're 100% correct. And it's funny because like, there are some people that are very much like in their own lane, but there's very few because now everyone's kind of dressing the same. Right. And they're kind of doing things very straight out. Like we brought up Riley Green, right? That's actually a really good example. Like every day on stage, he wears a t-shirt, a pair of jeans, a pair of boots, and a hat. And like, he pretty much doesn't stray off of that. And I would imagine
he has nothing,
probably what he wears outside too.
Yeah. And he doesn't have anything to prove. I never got that vibe from him. I don't know him, but I always respected Riley in a big way because I felt like he's a fan of songs, right? Yeah. Like he's a fan of good work. Like I don't think Riley Green is out there to be like, I'm the hottest guy alive, so I'm going to go be the hottest guy alive. And then I'm just going to go like, no, it starts with, you can tell who it starts with the song for.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
You know, and dude, like to that point, someone told me the other day on the phone, they were talking about someone and they're like next king of country music. And it's like, why do we make rash statements like that? Because, and I don't remember exactly who it was they were talking about, but it's like, I do remember going and like, never heard of them. And so I looked them up and I'm like, I don't hear The Chair.
Yeah.
I haven't heard Amarillo by Morning. And it's like, man, like stop with the rash statements and everybody just make great music and let's focus on that again, you know?
Yeah. I agree. And I think you're 100% right. Like, I think that there are so many people that point the fingers and go, oh, Cody Johnson's going to be the next king of country music. Like maybe I'm going to go out on a limb and say, Cody Johnson doesn't want to be the next king of country music. I want to say that he'll say George Strait is country music forever. Like, no, like dude, there's no need to chase someone for it. Like, it's unnecessary.
I mean, dude, like, okay, for instance, I love this, right? Like Parker McCollum, like I love this about him. The fact that he is such a big George Strait, and I think a fan of like what George and Norma have built together.
Yeah.
Like as a couple too. But he doesn't give me a vibe that he's trying to be George Strait by
any means. Not at all.
He's being Parker McCollum. You know what I mean? So anyways,
I agree. I think you're right. It's interesting. We don't always have to chase something, but something that you said that I find really interesting is that you're just talking about, you know, like Riley Green is a lover of good music, good songs, right? And And so I want to talk about your story a little bit, but the one thing that I think really has always stood out to me about you, right? And I've been listening to you since 2014 or whatever that was, right?
Oh,
And then, but I will say that the 2021 Upbringing album changed so much for me. I love that record. But so we'll talk about all this stuff. But what I wanted to say is that the one thing about you that I think is really important and that always stuck out to me about you is that you're just such a big fan of good music as a musician. Like you have a great voice, right? You're a great songwriter, but you're also a really Thanks. Great musician, and you have an ear for music, and the way you make music is just, it's just different and it's fun and I like it. And I like, even in this new EP, like it just sounds like you had a good time making it. And I don't know. So I just think as you, as a musician, it's really important that that sticks out for me, and that for, I'm sure for other listeners, they understand that, you know.
Well, so, yeah. I really appreciate that gesture. I want to make sure that I make the point that, like, you know, I by no means am I, do I feel like I've put out the best music out of anyone in so many years, or, you know, I've never thought that. I mean, there are definitely times where I'm like, you know, write a song and I'm like, man, that's the best thing I've heard this week, you know, or whatever. But, and that might only last another hour until the next writer gets out of the room. But, you know, man, I got to be honest. It's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't really understand, like, you know, I don't understand. I've learned, like, as a musician, producer, you know, slash some, you know, faux engineer or something, it's like, I don't understand it. I just know what sounds good and what doesn't sound good.
Yeah. Right.
And I know there's a lot of records being made that don't sound good.
Amen.
And I'm a big fan of, for me, exploring it and creating limitations. And, you know, you bring up Upbringing. I mean, that, you know, I give a lot of credit to John Randall for helping me step out of my box, and Charlie Sexton on that record, yeah. And JJ Johnson, and oh God, even the engineer Jacob Skiba on that was a big help. I mean, you know, he's done the last bunch of Gary Clark Jr. stuff, and then JJ yeah. playing with Mayer and Lenny Kravitz, right. And you know, Charlie with Elvis Costello, and God, Bob Dylan, so on and so forth. It's like, it's just, I was in a room worth of just powerhouse musicians.
Yeah.
And, man, I think that I've discovered that I don't necessarily work well with a lot of other people, but I can, because I'm always like, I mean, I've always just fathomed wanting to be the best at the most things that I can, and try to just, you know, like if I didn't get a bass take on a session that I loved, then I would go home and replay the bass take to make sure like we're getting the best out of that. And it's like, you know, I just wanted to discover something new. And in this house, you know, we're talking about the newest project. Like I had a big room down the hall that was like a tracking room and had drums set up and the whole deal, and everything was spread out and all my gear. And then I just kind of downsized some things, and I came in this little bitty room. I mean, this room, I think, is like a space I'm working in is like a 8x8, maybe 8x10 space. And I was just like, man, I'm just going to try to see how far I can take it. And realistically, yeah. People have asked like why, or what was the reason? Because I was fucking broke. I mean, I was so broke. I mean, I'm dead serious. Like these last bunch of records that I've done by myself are just purely because I didn't have the money to do anything else. Sure. I mean, I have cut full length records since I've been gone from Broken Bow, which, love those guys. I mean, they're crushing it right now. Yeah. What a great team. John Loba's a freaking, I mean, just they're just crushing it. Great artists. But you know, it's like, I just kind of do things because I have to sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and I had to explore to see how far I could take something.
Sure.
And so that's what I want that to be remembered in my records is like, I tried my best and I explored that, and I wasn't, you know, nothing's perfect, but it's what I could do at that time. You know?
Sure. Okay. But so how does that then? So if you're saying like, you don't need a lot to make something, right?
To see
like a pretty good, and a great response to something. I mean, that's got to feel good, right? Like six songs that you made in your house where you said like, maybe it's not perfect, but I listened to it and I go, man, like honestly, did I know that that you made, that you started producing a lot of that stuff in your house. Yeah, but that's because you were showing it. Like it was
yeah,
something, right? But otherwise, I would not have had a damn clue, right? Like I wouldn't have known if I didn't jump on your TikTok live or whatever it was, Instagram live, and watched them and saw you, you know, like tracking and doing all this stuff. Like I would have had not a single clue. So the fact that it sounds that good and you don't need all the bells and whistles to make something. I mean, for anyone that's listening, that's like, oh, I'm not going to make any music because I don't know what I'm doing. Like, look at Chase and go, all right, go for it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I mean, no, you're totally right. I mean, I feel like the best way to go on an odyssey is to find a boat.
Nice. Yeah.
And, you know, like learn how to paddle. And then when you can build a motor, build an engine. And then when something breaks down, know how to fix it because you built it. You know what I mean? And that's really kind of like my motto now and moving forward in my career is just like, man, find a boat and get on down the river and you pick up all the pieces that everybody else left behind and just see if there's something discoverable and see if there's something buildable and see what you can do. And, you know, I'm trying to find that more and more and every day as a songwriter I'm just actively trying to, you know, get better daily, you know? Yeah. I mean, I've never like tried to brag on the fact that like, oh wow, look at all this I can do at my house.
And
I
you're
mean,
so talented.
Dude, thank you, man. And I just feel like there's been times where, you know, listen, when I made that record, there's times where I'm like, God, I wish I could have called like, you know, Steve Jordan or Chad Cromwell or someone to play drums on this, but I'll just keep going, you know? Yeah. So anyways, but yeah, man. And Upbringing, man, that was a fun record. I feel like that was a big missed record, but from a lot of people. I mean, the label shut down, a lot of things happened, but that was a cool record.
I mean, that's 12 songs. That for me, that's 12, because that was a really weird point in life, right? Like to think that 2021 was that long ago is also like kind of crazy, but like that was such a weird point in life. And those are 12 songs that I burned out. I'm talking, it came out and for a week straight, I'm pretty sure that's all I listened to. And I don't do that. Like my friends tell me they get into the car and they never hear the same song twice. And that's a fact. But with that record, all I wanted to do was just listen to the whole thing from 1 to 12. That's it.
Yeah.
Because ending it with like High Drunk and Heartbroke. Fuck. I mean, like you hear me sing that song in the car, I sound like I could sell out stadiums, but no one's ever going to know because no one's ever going to hear it. But damn, I love that song. So I'm just saying, I just think it's a great record. And you know, it was kind of like your here I am, I'm back type deal. And I love it.
Well, that was a really exploratory kind of thing. I mean, I checked this out. The other day I was looking for that hard drive of that record. I'd lost it. I didn't know where it was. It was in my toolbox in my garage.
What a place to have the hard drive for the record.
Yeah. Well, here's what's funny. You know, people say like I made this quote in a like a bio or something about a little red Craftsman toolbox that I had hard drives hidden in with records on them. And they were like, oh, you know, basically like bullshit. But seriously, like if you look, this is serious. Like right there is a red toolbox.
There it is.
And that thing's just hard drives from top to back. And it's
awesome. Story.
So, but what's funny about the Upbringing record is I found that record and John and I, John Randall, you know, God, legend,
absolute legend,
brother and dear friend. He always wanted to remix that record and remaster it. And, you know, cause there are some things that you kind of miss in it, but there's a beauty in the essence of that record. But I found the hard drive, dude, we cut like there's this one take that's like an hour long or an hour and some long of me playing electric guitar. Charlie Sexton was playing like baritone and doing all this looping stuff. And then JJ Johnson's playing drums, but we were smoking cigarettes in the studio. I remember like we were allowed to smoke in that studio. I don't know if we were allowed. We probably paid.
But you did.
Yeah, we smoked all. I was a big smoker then. And so we're smoking and having beers and the whole thing. It's real late one night. And we're just cutting all those songs, but like real vibey and just three guys just playing shit down.
That's cool.
And I think it's better than that record.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if anything will come of it, but dude, there is some real magic in that because really? It's something I had never done. I had to kind of detach, and it's just us working things out. And like, so as you can hear, like, Charlie going, you know, do this or that, or JJ or John would walk in and go, you know, do you think you should turn this pedal off and maybe make this kind of thing? And it's badass.
Wow.
Really
That's
cool.
Really cool. So, wow. So there's a whole other upbringing record that sounds totally different on a hard drive.
There's different versions of, there's so many different versions of certain things. Like, you know, I go back to the single Hell If I Know, like we cut that like four different times, like, you know, different versions, ton of stuff, you know?
Sure. That's so cool. And I love that you work through it, like sounding so different. Cause I also think this is interesting, right? Cause like obviously your first stuff in 2014 is way different from like this other stuff, right? Because you kind of found yourself and, you know, you're a Texas guy, so you have a lot of country music influence, but you also have a lot of rock influence. And that's kind of where you hear all that, right? And I think that this record was obviously so different. And you know, obviously the new EP as well, because it kind of ties back into that rock side of things, and it's very funky and there's like those sides to it. But I love that you work through it by just kind of playing and just like figuring out like what you think works and doesn't work. And even if you think something works, maybe it just doesn't work as a whole, and I guess that's why you have a hard drive of something that sounds different. But
I think you nailed it. I mean, I think it's just you just work through things until maybe, you know, sometimes I think about it like, you know, if you're skydiving, you know, you stuck to landing. It didn't mean that that's probably not where you intended to land at the very beginning. You know, if you're out there by yourself skydiving,
but you landed. That's all that matters.
You landed. You know, I mean, it's like my engineer buddy always used to say, like, if you played a pass down, he always used to make this quote. He's like, man, ain't nobody doing what you're doing. And I mean, nobody, you know, that you could have done something really bad, but but it's that thought of like, you know, it's just, I think you just hash it out until something is fully recorded and it's okay, cool. We're going to go with that, you know?
Yeah. So when did you have that moment where like, because you went away for a while, right? And you came back. Yep. And when did you have that moment where you were kind of ready to just make the music you wanted to make, right? Like where you were like, you know what, screw this person and that person and whatever these people are saying. Like at what point did you just say, I am me and this is who I am and this is the music I'm going to make and I'm just going to do it?
I'm not going to name names, but there was a record guy one time that told me, he said, I told him something, how I felt. And he said, well, you know, it's kind of like, how was it? It's like, it's kind of like you're the monkey. And when I say dance, you dance. And I said, well, I would dance, except I'm not a monkey. And I knew then it was like, you know, I got to make a change. I got to do something right. But you know, what's funny is it's like, I don't think it was because of a record company. I mean, because Broken Bow was really good to me. I mean, we had a lot of success together. I mean, ample amounts of success together. I still talk to those guys a lot. I love them. I mean, they're great people. I mean, this new company, Empire, has definitely given me a lot more freedom to do what I want to do. But here's what's funny. It's like, I went away, but I don't know that I intended to go away for that long.
Okay.
Because all these projects were made in that time frame. And it's like, you know, in the 4 or 5 years that I've been missing, like, I still kind of feel like when I put up Ringing Out, like, I was still kind of missing. Because it was like, COVID, this label shuts down, all the PR budget goes away, the whole deal. And it's no hate towards anybody, that label. It's just things had to happen that way.
Yeah.
But it was just like, you know, man, I've just cut so much shit in that amount of time that I just feel like it was just kind of waiting. And I'm not necessarily, like, I got to be honest, like, I think when I made a little bit of you, if I'm being totally honest, had it not been for Derek George, who produced that with, we cut those records together early on and we wrote that song. Had it not been for him and then John Loba at the record label, that song would have never come out ever.
That's insane.
So here's what's funny. And like, I'll just tell you this, like, Take It On Back was not the first single.
Really?
Okay. So I think it's the first time I've ever said this like publicly, but There was a song called Summertime Saturday High that I wrote with Keith Urban's bass player, Jerry Flowers, and another buddy of mine, Jamie Moore, at the time. And it was the single. And we were on radio tour. We got up into Chicago. Someone basically said, like, hey, man, like, it's a cool song, but, dude, Take It On Back is the one to go with.
Wow.
They wouldn't even let me sing on my own demo of Take It On Back because they were pitching that song to Blake. And Blake, I think, had it on hold for a pretty good while, if I remember correctly. But anyways, when we cut that song, they wanted that instead of that song to get cut. There was a song that the head of the label wanted, a song called Ain't Nothing Like It, to get cut first. And Ain't Nothing Like It never came out. And it's a great song. But we cut Take It On Back basically as like a sound check in the studio.
Wow.
Then we finished it. We turn it in. Everybody's like, yeah, this is cool. Maybe we'll put it on the record. But we had been playing it on radio tour as like, well, here's some more songs that aren't on this EP.
Yeah.
We already sent out all the packaging. It's ready to come out. We're, you know, up for grabs for that iHeart deal. You know, Maddie and Tay are in it with Being the Girl in the Country Song, which is a freaking giant record.
Yeah, it was huge. Kate
Smith, Love You Like That was at the same time. And Sam Hunt, I think, was just coming off of it. So I'm in Chicago, and I walk downstairs. I go to have a cigarette, and I call the head of the label, and I said, hey, we need to go and Take It On Back. And he says, okay. He said, that's fine, but if it doesn't work, I'm putting all this on you because you're the one making this call, so it's up to you. So we put it out. It becomes I Heart on the Verge artist. And then A Little Bit of You comes, and we wrote that song. That's like, dude, that record is like basically was our demo.
Yeah. No way. Seriously?
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Oh, like, God. That wasn't supposed to happen. That wasn't even supposed to be on the EP. It wasn't supposed to be a part of anything. We wrote it with Ashley Gourley. It took us forever and a day to write that song. We write the song, and in fact, what I remember from that was, like, it was taking so long, we couldn't come up with a chorus, and Ashley and I were shooting basketball outside, and he's like, hey, just sing a high note, like, sing as high as you can. And I hit that high note in the chorus, he's like, that's it, let's go write it. It's like, that's what, you know? So we started writing the chorus. We finished the work tape. He sends it to John Loba. Derek sends it to John Loba. I'm going down Concord Road in Brentwood, Tennessee, and I'm turning off on the highway to go to bus call. And John Loba calls me. He's like, that's the next single. Change Your Name is not the next single anymore. We go with this. And I'm like, dude, I hate that song. I don't like that song at all. I love that song now.
Yeah.
And it really is like a good pop country kind of thing. Yeah. Like, it's a good thing.
People still listen to it in my world, yeah, which is telling you something.
Like, yeah, it's just like super weird. Like, things I never wanted sometimes were the best things for me.
Sure.
And so I still don't really know what I want. I don't know what I want to do. I just know that it'll happen the way it's supposed to happen.
Yeah, right.
I got a way of making that work that way for me. And right. So I've just been fortunate that way.
Yeah, that's so cool. And so just that story's wild. But that story's wild. I didn't know any of that. But it's like, you got to understand that, like, at that time, 2014 was kind of about the time that I was kind of diving into country music. Because like you, I'm a rock guy. I was a classic rock guy my entire life up until, I don't know, 2014-ish, 2013, 2014. So that song coming out was like one of the first, I'd say within the first 30 country songs that I really got into. And all of my friends also got into it, which was nuts because most of them didn't listen to country music, but they liked that song. And to this day, we'll be in the car. And I always tell the story, but me and my one buddy were he's one of my best friends, and he was then too. We'd drive around when we were bored in his 2001 Ford Escape. The Escape had a performance chip on it, so it went really fast. The RPM shot up. It was great. It was so weird. We don't know how it happened, but he bought it for really cheap. We would drive around, and I vividly remember that song, and just because the intro of that song is just so obviously telling, and you just know when it's coming on, just that song would come on, and we would just jam out every single time. So the story is cool. That's really cool. I didn't know any of that. Well,
there's so many weird instances like that. I mean, your life and your careers take so many dramatic turns. I mean, I was never signed to Broken Bow. I was actually supposed to sign a deal with Big Machine, and then that went away. They came and saw us on a showcase, and we blew it. And then we lost that contract with Big. We had a contract, I think. I know we had already, like, they'd come and seen stuff I was cutting in the studio, and
yeah,
it was like this real softy kind of country. I mean, it was like not supposed to work that, you know, and sure. It's like, I've just been very fortunate that things have worked the way they've worked. And I've been given so many chances and opportunities like that. I mean, because I never intended it to be that way. It just happened that way.
Yeah. So it's life takes some crazy turns. It's pretty nuts, but it all works out the way it's supposed to. Can you still hit that high note?
Yeah, it's man, I can like hear it in my head. It's always hold on, let me see. It's still up there.
So you just got so high right there that the speaker didn't even pick that up. That's how high that was. I just want you to know that your microphone didn't even grab that. That's so great.
Yeah, yeah, dude. It's weird. I lost my voice for a while in 2020. I was on the Kip Moore tour. I lost my voice for, I think almost like a month or so. They were questioning if it would come back. And I'd gone out and I kept blowing it and blowing it. And then I was on the Kip Moore run. I got really sick. And so anyways, I'd blown it. I went home, saw a vocal coach, and they were like, a vocal doctor, you know, ear, nose, throat at Vanderbilt. And they were like, hey, you know, don't go back out. Well, I went back out. And I walk on stage from Manhattan, Kansas. We're in Wichita, Kansas. I was singing Manhattan, Kansas, that festival. But we're in Wichita, Kansas, playing a show. I walk on stage. I go to hit a note. And it felt like somebody took my vocal cords and shot them at the front of my throat, like a slingshot or something.
Yeah.
And I was just spitting cups of like blood, just nonstop, blown a bunch of blood vessels back there. I couldn't speak for weeks. I mean, I literally couldn't whisper. I nothing was working. So it came to where we were having to go on the road because there were some guarantees we couldn't cancel. So the doctor's like, you know, if it's not right, like, we just don't know if it's coming back. You know, like, we asked you not to go back out. You did. And so we get into Lawrence, Kansas. We wind up out there. You're not a theater. And dude, I can hear if my voice is there by hearing that note and a little bit of you in my head.
Yeah.
And a weird thing, if I get a cold and lose my voice, I can't hit that note in my head.
Wow.
I don't even have to. It's
that's
like real
so wild.
Real strange. So that's all a lot for me.
You didn't like it at the time, but it's done a lot going forward. Yeah. That's crazy. The longevity of it's insane. That's awesome. I love it.
It lets me know how sick I am. It lets me know what kind of money I've made. You know, it's like, great.
I love it. So let me ask you. So with all these things, right? You know, you start and kind of that first year is like kind of weird because you don't know what song's going to be the single. And there's all this stuff that's going on. You lose your voice, right? All this stuff. And take a break. You come back. How much of that has helped you in terms of your writing, right? Because, like, I'm a big songwriter guy. I love writers. And it's just something I'm really passionate about. I don't do it, but I just love it. So as a writer, how much of that time and those, obstacles that got in the way, all those things, like, how much of that has helped you grow as a writer that obviously helped your artist career as well? But,
well, I think as a writer, I think it's a lot of things. I think it's one of it. I think it's like you accept parts of your life that you didn't want to accept or talk about. You start finding it okay to heal. That helps. I mean, I think those things you're talking about definitely help me, but also, like, man, just like driving. I love to drive.
Me too.
Like, tomorrow I'm going to drive 8 hours. And then I'm going to just turn around and come around. I got to go like do this random thing, but I'm just going to drive and just drive back. Just to listen to some records by myself and just know And so it's like random things like that. And then also just like reading is like a big one for me. And if I am writing at home by myself or like in my own space, I like to like turn on, like, if I'm going somewhere specific on a record, like, those are my two crazy bird dogs. I don't just wear a duck on my head. I actually hunt birds, but anyways. So there was a time I was really trying to make a concept record about, I wanted to write a record that could sound like if you turned off all the audio on No Country for Old Men, like it would fit over that. And so I would just turn on No Country for Old Men and then just write and make music and then try to, you know, it's like, there's all kind of weird things that help me as a writer. And also just like, I've got my phone set up against my back, but like I carry a bunch of these guys around.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I just journal, jot things down daily. And then this is just like, I write these notes daily about my life and just like what's going on. And like literally everything is going on.
That's awesome.
And I've got like, you know, it's cool because I can say when I started it, the day that I end it. And then like, my goal is just to put these away that like, if I have kids one day, they can open this up and they can, they can read. I mean, I've gone back to like analog calendars, like literally just doing all my calendars like that. You know, it's like, just to kind of keep track of what's going on. Maybe I can look through here and find a song, you know?
Sure. Sure. I think that's awesome. And I think that people talk about, especially like within the last 10 years, people talk about how important it is to journal. And for some people that really works. And for me, I don't know if that works. I find, you know, I find creativity and also just like, peace and a lot of other things that isn't writing my ideas down. But for people who can do that, like, I think it's great because you have just this hard copy in your hand, like, this is how I've been feeling recently. Like, this is my life. These are my notes of just what's going on. And that's really valuable, especially for you as a writer,
there are some definite, like, okay, for like songwriters listening, like, I'm not, you know, no, am I, you know, I'm no Neil Medley or Ryan Beaver, or, you know, any of those guys. Shout out Neil. I was, you know, there's a couple things I think you have to start with in writing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to do it. You know, some people are inspired on like yellow page, you know, things, but like, okay. I'm just gonna give like my five tips for writers, right? Like in general.
Lay them on the table. Five tips.
Moleskine journals. You know those things? You know, yeah. I think they're Moleskine, whatever they
Moleskine,
are.
Yeah.
They're the worst. They're horrible. They're absolute shit paper. Throw them away.
Yep.
Find good paper and find something that feels good in your hand. Like for me, it's this. Like this is just like a Kaweco or Kaweco.
Yeah.
Sport. It's a fountain pen. I enjoy getting up in the morning and just writing with a fountain pen and watching it bleed. I like doing that. I like refilling it, but I like that I just have, it's this, and I carry one pencil around with me, and then I've got one really nice pen that I sign like contracts with.
Sure.
My point being, if you find something that's comfortable to start, the ending is a whole lot more comfortable.
All right. I like it.
It's not so much like, you know, and dude, like I'll skip like 10 days in writing and journaling, you know, I'll skip. It's just like, I'm just trying to capture moments that means there's no need to write about every day of your life, because let's be honest, every day is interesting.
Everything's exciting.
Yes, exactly. And so it's like, I just try to find things like go to a bookstore and go through paper and try to find paper and like go through some pencils, go through some pens, like try some things, because what it's done for me as a writer is it's just kept it at my side all the time. Just and I carry this little leather bag around with me all the time. I don't even carry my guitar in a bag. I just put I carry a camera. I carry three or four notebooks, a couple pens and pencils, my AirPods, a lot of these things, 'cause these are great.
Yeah.
And then I just, man, everywhere I go, I can write, you know,
you actually carry a camera, like a literal camera.
Yeah, dude, check it out.
That's fucking awesome.
X100V.
That's fucking awesome. I love that.
It's so cool because it's a film simulation. It simulates film, like old Fuji film, but like, you know, like you know, we had a snow day recently and like I took this, you know, picture.
That's awesome. Yeah.
You know, I just something that I can just capture moments, man. Like writing, photography does that. I mean, I'm into that stuff. I mean,
cool.
I'm into capturing moments of my life, and I'm not a big fan of things anymore. I don't want too many things. I just want moments that I can remember. Things that make me cry, things that make me laugh. I mean, you know, last night was one of the most just profound like moments that I wrote about, like, for, and I'll just share it with you, right? Like, I've got an aunt that is sick and is probably not, you know, just not going to make it much longer, you know, and by the time this podcast comes out, she may not have made it, and maybe she kicks around and surprises all of us, but It snowed here in Nashville. One of the things that last things I heard her tell me was she always wanted to see it snow. Last night, my cousin and I and my wife were sitting at the kitchen table, or dining room table, sorry. And I said, let's tell our favorite story about her. And we did. And my hunting dog comes in, this is my dog Trigger, and he goes to the window and he starts just absurdly barking. And I was like, what in the world? It's 40 degrees outside and it's spitting snow, larger snowflakes than I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. And to some people, it was just snowing.
Yeah.
But to me, I heard my aunt say for the last time, oh my God, I've always wanted to see it snow like that.
Yeah. Wow.
That was the moment I won't forget. Yeah. I've got that picture. I've got that written down. I'll never forget that moment. My kids will never forget that if they get to look at that, you know, it's, it's just like it's so important as a writer to understand moments and not just be the guy who drives to work every day and goes, well, what am I going to write about today? Why do that when you've got real things to write about? That's what the world lacks anymore in music.
Yeah.
Is real moments, things that actually matter, you know?
It goes back to what we were saying before about like, you can tell when someone's like, I was recently watching this video. It was like a Grady Smith video, I think it was. And it's a really old one. And they were talking about just the resurgence of people bleeding from pop music to country music and back and forth.
Yeah.
And he was just talking about, he just said something where it said like, you can tell when someone's really authentic in what they're saying. Right. And like what you're saying is 100% authentic. Like you're saying, why just like think of just something that could happen when you can write about something that is or does happen. Like,
yeah.
I think that's what makes music so great. Like I get made fun of all the time for being a little bit of and made fun of, like, not seriously, like picked on by my friends and family. Right.
Yeah.
But because I like to listen to, you know, sad songs and I like to hear story songs and the things that make me happy are when someone's really laying their heart on their sleeve. And I sit down here and watch old country road TV, like rounds at the Opry where they just talk about their songs and they talk about why they're so important. And
dude, you're so spot on with that. That it's, you know, like, I mean? it's like I sent Jelly Roll a DM. I don't think I've ever met him, and he's probably not. I don't think he's ever seen and responded to my DM. But I just said, I just thought it was so refreshing to see someone be so honest. He said something that really moved me. And he said it was in that documentary he made. He said, basically, like saying, like how he's helping people, and he's still fucked up.
Yeah,
like he still has things to work through.
Yeah,
but allowing himself to, and like I just sent him a DM that night. I was like, you don't know me, I don't know you. I just think you're the most genuine, real thing. And like, dude, like musically speaking, like. When Zach Bryan was happening, I was living in Texas when Zach Bryan really started popping.
Yeah.
And really, like, before, you know, some people did know him, and then, but everyone in Texas knew him. Like, everyone was like, oh my God, incredible.
I've knew him for years prior to him popping off, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so, like, a lot of people back home knew him, but then a lot of my friends didn't know him. And I didn't like it. I didn't get it. And then, and he put out this last record, and I got into it. And I was just like, man, people need to quit giving him, you know, shit for these songs.
Yeah.
Because he's like, name another stream of conscience writer like that right now.
Yeah.
Name one. You're not going to, because there's not one. Not like that. And I'm saying, like, and this, you know, in this picture frame that are your big artists, you know, these A-listers, like right now, like, who cares? I mean, it's like Lainey does her thing great and all these other guys in that picture frame right now, but he has set himself apart in a world that everyone is chasing someone's tail.
I mean
just it's you know, I don't know, people try to call it the Lumineers, people try to say it's stolen from this or that, but it's like, no, let's be honest, Greta Van Fleet was stolen from Led Zeppelin
100%, and right. I love Greta Van Fleet, but it's true.
Yeah, but I also feel like Zach Bryan is such a like, I don't know. I just think it's such a cool thing to hear.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think that he's
guys of that nature. Like, I like that, you know?
Right, and I think you're 100% correct. And what I think is important to mention about that is that those people that are saying he's given him a bunch of shit for these songs, right? I'm not sitting here and telling you that I've loved everything he's put out in the last 3 years. I'm not going to tell you that. But I think that he's 100% authentic. And I think that what he's doing is absolutely fantastic for him, the genre as a songwriter, like all this stuff. I think it's great. I mean, like, do I love it all? I mean, no, but that's why music is subjective. Like, you're not supposed to love it. You don't have to love it all. It's not a thing. But I think that what he's doing changes the game for everything, because you have all of these people. And I actually recently said this because we were having a conversation about just about, like, up here about a lot of my friends that say, like, I don't like country music, but I like X, Y, and Z. And they name, like, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, and Dolly Parton. I'm like, okay, well, so you do, but all right. And we were just having this whole conversation, and I was talking about how guys like Tyler and Zach Bryan, and we can go on and on, Coulter Wall, like, these guys are really great for the genre, because they're super deep songwriters. Like, their songwriting is so authentic to them and personal and all this stuff. So their music brings people in when you didn't think that you were going to enjoy it.
And yeah, like, dude, that's really great. Like Floyd Vance, like, God, I mean, that's some of the most country writing I've heard in the last 30 years of my life. Okay, but let me say this too. And I don't know that, and I'll let you go on to another question after this, but I don't know if I haven't listened to the Neil Medley podcast, but I almost bet you he brought someone up that I'm going to name, but it seems like to me in this town, and this drives me nuts, and I get there was a formula to it, the radio formula. I understand that. There are formulas to it. Ashley Gourley understands that. He's got that pinned, and there ain't nobody like him. Like, he had. Talk crap about him, talk good about him, whatever. My experiences were always good. He knows how to do what he does.
Yeah, he does.
But different round, okay, like, and I'm just going to stay on the same topic with the same couple artists that we've been talking about. Different round here, like Riley Green to me, I don't read that in here, Hell Raising Heat of Summer, Florida Georgia Line. Like, I don't, it doesn't sound radio sexy to me. It doesn't.
It's not.
You know, one of the best, and I was just going to say this, is like, one of the greatest records that I don't hear enough people talk about, and there's really like two out of this town that I just think are absolute brilliant records and were not written to, well, we got to have this sexy hook. Let's write to the hook. Keith Gaddis was the motherfucking man. Keith Gaddis wrote one of the greatest records that I have heard in my entire life in this town.
Amen.
It's called Big Blues. And that song, California, in my opinion, when he gets to the part where he says, California's in my headlights. It's been so long since I've seen stars in the sky. Man, that record, you know, I have cried on that record. I have felt like I wanted to stick my fist through a wall just for fun. You know, like, and then Waylon Payne, the Drifter.
Yeah.
Elevator operator looked at me and smiled. When he's talking about going the bottom, you know, talking about the elevator, like, you know, says I'm going all the way to the bottom, yada yada yada, whatever. Those were songs that were written by, those were written out of feeling. They weren't written to a hook. When you write to a hook, a lot of times you lose the story. I think
you do.
However, the world needs the little bit of use. They need to take it on backs. They need Cruise, Florida Georgia. They need Up Down, and they need like all that stuff. But man, like, quit. You know, it's like, I just wish people thought more about the idea than they thought about the hook.
I agree. And you know what? I think that those are great examples. I love Waylon Payne.
Including myself.
Fair. And I think that those are great examples. And we did mention Keith, if that's the person that you were talking about, because we talked about Keith for a really long time. I love Keith. Obviously, Neil does too, and so do you. So, I mean, everyone loves Keith. How could you not? But because that record changed my entire view on life, among a few others. But both of those records, I 150% agree. And I think that you're right. The world does need those catchy, right to the hook songs. But but then there's guys like me, and there's guys like you, and there's so many other out there that songs like El Cerrito Place, but Keith's version, like all of these songs that change lives. And it's because you have those commercial songs that bring people in, and then you have all the other stuff that absolutely changes a person's view and a person's life. And, you know, without the catchy stuff, you don't get that meat. But,
well, and it's And it's part of the, like, dude, it's also part of the records too. Like, okay, just side note, like, just like to that, like, I've wanted to make this sign and put it like in every recording studio. And it's like, don't hit the Q, and the Q meaning like the quantize button. Don't hit the quantize button. I quit locking everything down. That's not how LA does it. Like, I know that there's a lot of people that are like, well, we want it to sound like this and that. And it's like, okay, but Jeff Basker would talk about cutting Uptown Funk. And it's like,
yeah,
things are a little out of time, and things are like, stop erasing the human element in music.
Yeah.
Do I agree with AI making music? No, I don't agree with it. I think it's bullshit. I think it's bullshit that we can't turn around this law that is supposedly out of date, that doesn't help songwriters make money.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, when is the last time, like, I mean, you know, it's like, there's so many fixes that need to be made. I get it. AI is cool. I get it does some things that are cool, but it's like, we are erasing the human element of music daily, and it's sick. It's like, splice, cool. I've used it. I've gotten drum loops from it. Don't forget about me. Drum loop. Like, that's a drum loop. It's not me playing drums.
Yeah.
I get it, cool, but it's like, man, it's like, there's so many things that it's like, why are we erasing the human part of it? If your truck breaks down, you ought to be able to know how to fix it.
Yeah.
But pretty soon, you won't be able to. And it's like, I know you can't compete with time. Time is what time does. And so that's
you're 100% correct. I agree. I'm with you. I think that you know the when you don't take that human element out of it, like when it's all there and you know that the people are playing and doing whatever, like it resonates more with everyone. And you know it because people say it and they talk about how good it is. Right. And so but you're right. Like, it is time, and technology is always going to evolve and evolve, and time's always going to move forward, and that's it. But
we can try our best not to. And I kind of contradicted myself, because I was basically saying, give studio musicians more work. Give studios more work. However, I just made a record completely by myself, so I'm the asshole in this situation. But what I'm trying to say is, it's like, dude, you know, sure, the computer can play it, but Rob McNally's a bad man on guitar. Tom Bugatti's bad. Ed Hughes is a great man. I mean, it's like, so it's like, you know, I just wish that people maybe not compare themselves so much and just search for uncharted territory. It's out there.
I agree. I'm with you. And you know, it's all based on your circumstance and what you have available to you. But, you know, if you can and you want those people to really play, let them play. That's why they're there. Yep. They want to play for a reason. Hey, so six songs, Somerville, right? This came out first start of 2024, right? Like, this was like the first couple of weeks, right? Which is a hot start to the year. I love it. My favorite, I think, probably has to be Used to Be. I think that might be my favorite. I think so. I don't know. It'll always change for me, but that's probably my favorite right now.
That guy that I wrote that song with, Luke Preston, he is a freak of nature. That guy is so good. He's one of those guys that, like, I got that feeling early on when I was writing with Stephen Wilson Jr. I mean, Stephen Wilson and I wrote, I don't even know how many songs. I mean, I love him. He's a brother.
He's insane.
Yeah, he's freakish. Luke Preston is great. Used to be really cool. I love that song. I knew immediately that was what I started with on the EP. I feel like I don't know. That was a fun one. I love that EP. I dig that EP. Like, I like listening to it. I love I really love Don't Forget About Me Too. Like, that's really cool one. I feel like that's one of my more mature pieces of work. I mean, I Hope You Do is a really special one to me. It's a cool EP, and you know, we've got like four more coming this year.
I heard about that.
So I'll walk you through it. I mean, so the first one was Somerville, which is such a that project was made right here in this bedroom. Next is a record called Ashland City, which was cut also here, but in my big room at home when I was in the big room. What's really cool about that project is I moved to town years ago, and basically because of a guy named Adam Box. He's a drummer. He plays for Brothers Osborne. He's a really great drummer from Meridian, Mississippi. We had a little band that, I mean, I guess, I don't know if he was playing for me or we had a band, what you want to call it. We used to rehearse this trailer house in Texas together, and so cool that a family friend let us work out of. And it was our first time getting recorded together. We recorded some stuff. I've got a song that I wrote on that project that I'm really stoked about. This song called Wild and Tame is it's me, Keith Gaddis, and Ray Wiley Hubbard wrote that. It is the wildest piece of work that I'll probably put out. I mean, it's like, in the sense of like, dude, it, when you hear it, it's like, I'll just leave it up to you to decide, but it's like,
sure,
it's nuts. It's absolutely irate. It's just crazy. But then, some stuff I wrote Casey Beathard on that project. And then just a few, man, I mean, it's a really cool project. It's kind of a little more produced than the first project, you know. Okay. Like in the there's a little bit more going on than the Total Sparseness, but really cool record. Neil Medley and Ryan and I wrote a great one on that project.
Awesome.
Then I've got a record that I'm really stoked about. I can't really say a whole lot about it, but it's going to be packed. It's
sweet,
real badass. It's a project called Coyote Grullo that I cut down in Texas when I lived down there in my old garage there. And then I've got a record too that I probably should stop naming names of them, but I had a project that I cut down in on this ranch out in the middle of nowhere, basically like no phone service, no nothing. We posted up in a log cabin out in the middle of the woods for a couple of weeks and made this record that sounds like Nine Inch Nails and John Mellencamp had a baby or something. It's nice. It's wild. It was my old 3-piece band and
cool,
real experimental. And so yeah, man. And then I'm planning my next project now. Like I've already started.
Jeez,
I would love in a perfect world to be done with these EPs and get into a full length. And I think I'm gonna write a lot of it by myself. But I'm real excited about it. I'll say
that's
that.
Awesome. That's real, awesome. And so real, much music too. And I love it. I love it. I think that's great. I mean,
there's so much for people to listen to this year that it's like you can kind of, you know, there might be certain people that don't like certain EPs, but they might be for someone else, you know? And it's just kind of touches to, I feel like it's kind of like, who are you as a producer? Who are you as a writer? Like, what are the different colors in your palette? You know what I mean?
And what I think is cool is you get to open yourself up now, right? Because now, like, someone may have listened to Somerville and go, that one might not be for me, but the one, 2 projects from now, it might be for them. And you might gain a whole other side of fans, right? Like, I think that that's really important because now you're not just this one dimensional person. You have these other lanes going to who you are. And I think that that's really cool. And it allows you to really grow a much larger fan base too. And so I think it's awesome. I can't wait to hear them all. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I think it's like, if you loved, let's just say like, okay, if you loved Upbringing, man, you're really gonna love like projects 2 and 4.
Yeah.
If you love like my early stuff, you're really gonna like 1 and 3. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a cool feeling. Is like,
sure.
What does it matter? You know, my manager put it best, Nick Hartley, was like, quit worrying about it. Just put it out.
Yeah.
What can go wrong?
You
got to get this out in the world, or it's just, you know, it's like gonna deteriorate somewhere, you know?
And it's cool that you like that you're using both sides of it. You're not just like, oh, that stuff that kind of sounds like the first stuff isn't really me, I'm not gonna put it out. Like, it's cool that you're putting it all out. I think that's awesome. Yeah. So
because I'm still deciding that, like, I'm still figuring it out. I don't know, like, you know, I would, man, like, I'm not saying I'd like to make, okay, like, I'm not trying to say like I like to make a rock record, like, in essence, like Hardy, like that's another style of rock for
right
me. I mean, he's got that shit down, but for me it's like I would love to make a record that's like just me being really expressive as a guitar player.
Yeah.
And as a melodically, and just, you know, it's like, so I'm done with trying to categorize myself to one specific thing. It's like, I just want to make good records.
I love it. You're a music guy.
Yeah. I'm a music guy. Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's super important. And the one thing I've always said about you is that, you know, you're an artist, you're a songwriter, and you're also just a hell of a musician. I said that in the beginning and I'll say that now. It's just like, I think that you're that you're just the three-tool athlete or the utility player, you can kind of do it all. And whether you think you can do it all super well or not, like, I think that you're great at all of it. So I think that's just, it's really important. And I love that you want to experiment and express yourself. And that's what music's supposed to be about. You're not supposed to sit in one lane because you just think people want you there. You could just go where you want to go because it's up to you at the end of the day. So I love it, dude. Thanks for coming to hang with me, man. I'm really excited for people to hear this, and I'm just such a big fan of you and your music and how you approach music and songwriting and all that good stuff. And so I appreciate you coming to tell your story and do all that good stuff,
man. I appreciate you just kind of loving on songwriters too. I mean, it's a lost feels like it's a lost art daily, you know. It's like I would, you know, it's almost like I would hate to see what that commodity looks like on the New York Stock Exchange. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think it's an art that nobody wants to pay for, but it's an art that's probably more beautiful than the rest.
That's right. So I'll tell you that.
I'm glad you're putting some light on it. And I hope, you know, like I said, man, anything that I can say is just like, anything we ever talk about is just like, it's just my opinion.
Yeah.
You know? And, And I'm just glad that someone gives a shit enough to listen to it for this long. So, but man, anytime, just holler at me and I'm always around.
I appreciate it, Chase. I really do. I love it all. And you know, your opinion's your opinion. That's important. So everybody, you can go follow Chase on Instagram at I am Chase Bryant, all one word. His EP Somerville is out now. You can catch all his music wherever you stream music. Stream it all. Let me know your favorite. I'm curious. And I would like to talk about this guy for 3 million hours if I could. So, but you know, let me know what you like and I would love to talk about it. But thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Remember Country Music Podcast. Remember to rate, subscribe, give us 5 stars if you love the episode, and follow us on Instagram at @RCM_podcast. New episodes come out every Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, wherever you listen to pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. It's there. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for streaming each week. I appreciate that. Numbers are going up. Don't really know why. I'm not going to question it. We're just going to let it go. But thanks for tuning in. I'm Kyle. That's Chase. We'll see you next week. Peace out.